Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's January 23rd, 2026, times 9:32. Sorry for the delay. We were having a meeting with dealing with our potential gas line this morning, so we had to take care of that before we started here. I'd like to just remind everybody to silence their cell phones and we will proceed. With me today is Senator Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, Senator Cronk, Senator Hoffman, and we are going to talk about the revenue forecast. And for the upcoming year, we've invited the department to come. And we've got an acting revenue commissioner, Janelle Earls, and we have a familiar face, Mr. Stickle, Dan Stickle. I'd like to have you both come forward, jump in the hot seats. Maybe the acting revenue commissioner could introduce herself to the committee for a little bit. Well, I'd like to note that Senator Giesel's here also in the audience. Give us a little bit about your background and tell us about how you're going to make sure that all the compliance measures are in check at the Department of Revenue before we go forward. It seems to be a issue that's timely.
Good morning. Thank you for having us here. My name is Janelle Earls, Acting Commissioner and Administrative Services Director for the Department of Revenue. I have about 21 years of experience with the state, mostly working in budget and finance. 13 years were with the Department of Health and Social Services, and I've been with the Department of Revenue for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And I'd just like to thank you for having us here today.
And you'll follow all your fiduciary duties?
I will, to the best of my ability.
That'll be good, and we'll talk about that in future meetings, that subject, in probably more detail than some would like, but it's an issue. So with that, Mr. Stickle, are you going to help out your new boss, or are you going to let her hang the poor gal out on the table? Or?
For the record, Dan Stickle, Chief Economist for the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, so I think I will give I'll take the lead on going through the presentation. Acting Commissioner will be available if there's anything you want to policy-type question on.
Okay, Ms. Earl, we're not too scary. We know you're new to the job, so that's why Mr. Stickle's done this numerous times. He can do it off the back of with no notes. So we'll let you get up to speed before we have really discussions with the department with you. How's that?
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Stickle, go ahead and take us through the presentation, and we will be concentrating and taking a look at the separation of barrels, GVR barrels, both 20 and 30%. So kind of keep that in mind as you go through this to try to delineate that, and we'll kind of point that out. And we'll have another presentation in the future to the committee on that subject.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, and to point out, related to the GVR versus non-GVR, that has to do with a provision of the production tax code that provides an incentive for the first several years of production from new fields. We don't have a detailed breakout of that in the presentation today. We do have two tables in the revenue sources book. We have table 6-8 provides a accounting of total production expected from GVR and non-GVR, and then appendix D provides an accounting of lease expenditures from GVR and non-GVR fields, and we'd be happy to work with the committee on providing any additional detail that you'd like after this presentation.
Thank you.
So, ready to jump in?
Yep.
All right, so thank you for the opportunity to come present the fall revenue forecast. Slide two of the presentation just provides an overview of how we're going to approach the presentation. So the first section provides some background about the forecast, walks through our key assumptions. Then I will walk through the state revenue forecast, beginning with total state revenue and then going into detail on the unrestricted portion of state revenue. And then the last section of the presentation will walk through our assumptions around the oil forecast in detail. So slide four, the revenue forecast was, the fall revenue forecast was released on December 11th, and then we released the full revenue sources book a week later on December 18th. The revenue sources book is an annual publication. It's over 100 pages long, has detailed information on all of the state's revenue sources. We maintain statistical models for all of the state's revenue sources, produce a 10-year revenue forecast. And that document, as well as all of our historical revenue forecasts, are located on our website, tax.alaska.gov. So this fall forecast formed the basis for the governor's initial budget proposal that was released in mid-December, and then we will be doing an updated revenue forecast later in the spring that will be used to underlie the final budget decisions being made. Slide five walks through our key assumptions for the revenue forecast. So to reiterate, our forecast represents one scenario within a range of potential outcomes, and there's uncertainty around several of the variables in the forecast. Oil price is one example. Prices change on a daily basis, so there's always going to be a range of uncertainty around the forecast. For the investment revenue forecast, we incorporated actual returns through the end of October of 2025. The projected return for the permanent fund is 7.6% annualized for the remainder of fiscal 26, and then a long-term assumption of 7.3% annually. For the federal revenue forecast, we worked with the Office of Management and Budget to incorporate known information around federal funding as of early December for fiscal years 26 and 27. For fiscal years 28 and beyond, we simply assumed an inflation assumption based on the 2027 budget numbers. The petroleum revenue forecast is based on an Alaska North Slope oil price of $65.48 per barrel for fiscal year 2026 and $62 per barrel for fiscal year 2027. That represents the latest information available in the futures market for expected future oil prices as of early December, and that outlook has not changed materially since then. Looking at non-petroleum revenues, so there's a variety of other revenues that flow into the forecast. For corporate income tax, we assumed a bit of a slowdown for 25 and beginning of 26. There is no recession built into our forecast. For tourism, we're assuming stable passenger counts around 1.7 million cruise visitors. That assumes that the tourism activity will remain fairly constant around the record levels we've seen in recent years. Looking at fisheries taxes in particular, calendar 23 and 24 were very challenging in that industry. Last year, we instituted an assumption of a five-year recovery from those 2024 lows. Based on the preliminary data we're seeing for 2025, it looks like we're on track towards that recovery in terms of revenue. And then the mining industry is an area of some optimism given the strong metals prices that we've seen. We do use the futures market to inform our forecasts there, and you know, as we've all seen, some of those prices for gold and silver in particular have actually continue to increase since we produced the forecast in December. Slide six is a graphical depiction of our total state revenue that the state brought in fiscal year 2025. Alaska's revenue is basically a three-legged stool, so the top three sources of revenue to the state are investment earnings, federal revenue, and petroleum revenue. Collectively, those three sources brought in 93% of total state revenue in fiscal year 2025. And all other sectors and industries, while important to the state economy, brought in only about 7% of total state revenue. Alaska currently does not have a broad-based state sales or income tax, so our reliance on these three sources is somewhat unique for Alaska. And then slide 7 is a similar graphic, just looking at the unrestricted general fund revenues. These are revenues that are available for general appropriation by the legislature, and 90% of those revenues are coming from investments, primarily the percent of market value draw from the permanent fund, and then petroleum revenues, with all other sources contributing about 10% of unrestricted state revenue in fiscal year 2025. So the next section of the presentation walks through some of the numbers in that revenue forecast, starting with slide 9 that looks at the total state revenue for fiscal year 2025 as well as the forecast for fiscal 26 and 27. So in our revenue forecast and in state budget documents, revenues are broken into four categories based on the level of restriction around those revenues. The first category is the unrestricted general funds. These are usually the focus of most of the budget discussions. These are revenues that are available for appropriation by the legislature for any purpose and have no restrictions around how they can be used. The next category of revenues are designated general fund revenues. These are technically available for appropriation but customarily used for some specific purpose. An example here is that the state's vehicle rental tax is deposited into a special account within the general fund and customarily appropriated for tourism, marketing, and development activities. Then we have the other restricted revenues. These are revenues that are truly restricted in how they can be used in some way. And an example here is that the commercial passenger vessel tax is restricted by federal law, and so any revenues generated by that tax must be appropriated for specific uses that directly support the cruise ship industry and passengers. And then finally, all federal revenues are treated as their own category of restricted, as the federal government places certain provisions around how those funds have to be used. So for fiscal year 2025, total state revenue from all sources was about $19.2 billion, and we are forecasting $17.8 billion for fiscal year 2026 and $15.3 billion for fiscal year 2027. And so for the remainder of the presentation, I'll be focused on the unrestricted general funds portion of the revenue, as that's the area that has the most discretion in the budget. So slide 10 looks at what we were forecasting in the spring 2025 forecast that was released in March and how that changed for the fall 2025 forecast that was released in December. So in terms of Alaska North Slope oil prices, we decreased our forecast by $2.52 per barrel for fiscal year 2026 and by $5 per barrel for fiscal year 2027. In terms of oil production, as we heard yesterday, the fiscal year 2026 forecast was reduced by 7,000 barrels per day, but then the FY 2027 forecast was increased by about 28,000 barrels per day, and that is primarily based on increased confidence around the Pikka field coming online in the very near future. Our total unrestricted revenue forecast was decreased by $181 million for the current fiscal year and by $119 million for the next fiscal year. And the primary reason for that reduction to the forecast was the lower price outlook. So slide 11 lays out the unrestricted revenues for the three primary components. Investment revenue is the largest source of unrestricted revenue, contributed about $3.8 billion in fiscal year 25. We're expecting that to increase to $4.1 billion by fiscal year 2027. followed by petroleum revenues, which generated $1.9 billion of unrestricted revenue in fiscal 25, and we're forecasting $1.4 billion in each of fiscal 26 and 27. And then non-petroleum revenues, which generated $639 million in fiscal 25, and we're expecting a little over $600 million in fiscal 26 and $694 million in fiscal 2027. So those are the unrestricted revenue components, and then the next set of slides will walk through the detailed breakout of each of these three categories of unrestricted revenue. Starting with the investment revenue on slide 12. So the permanent fund transfer is the largest portion here. That's the percent of market value transfer from the fund each year. That generated $3.7 billion in fiscal year 2025. We're forecasting $3.8 billion in fiscal 26 and $4 billion in fiscal 27. This is very important to the state. Accounts for about two-thirds of our unrestricted general fund revenue just from that permanent fund transfer for each year in the 10-year forecast going forwards. In addition to that permanent fund transfer, there's a modest amount of other investment revenue, $136 million in fiscal 25, and we're expecting that to decline to about $81 million by fiscal 2027. This represents primarily earnings on the general fund balance, cash balance, and the reason we're expecting a decline in that particular line item is just the lower prevailing interest rate for cash and equivalents. Slide 13 provides a little bit more detail and a 10-year outlook for the percent of market value transfer from the permanent fund. That transfer is expected to remain fairly stable in real inflation-adjusted terms at around $3.8 billion per year. In nominal dollars of the day terms, that will increase to $5.3 billion by fiscal year 2036. Our assumption is based on a 5% market value calculation, so it's based on 5% of the ending value of the fund for the first five of the last six fiscal years. That makes it a fairly stable revenue source to the state. We assume a 7.3% long-term annual return on the fund to generate this revenue forecast.
And the inflation component?
Mr. Chairman, our inflation assumption is 2.5% annually.
So that we're going to go backwards then?
Mr. Chairman, the forecast here is a 7.3% long-term return assumption, 2.5% inflation. When you balance that against additions to the fund with based on the permanent fund's share of royalty deposits, we expect that the transfer will be relatively stable in real terms.
Right, so let me rephrase that. Holding the purchasing power constant, not accounting for future contributions. Could you add that up for me?
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to run some numbers on that.
Yeah, I can do that. 5 plus 2.5 is 7.5, and you're going to make 7.3. You're going backwards, 200 basis points. So the point being to the committee members, the 5% payout is on the high end. That's the point I wanted to make. If the goal is to continually grow the permanent fund over time. Go ahead, next slide.
All right, moving on to slide 14, a detailed breakdown of petroleum revenues, unrestricted petroleum revenues. So there's four main sources here. The first is the oil and gas production tax. This is the state's severance tax on petroleum resources. For North Slope Oil, it consists of a net profits tax with a gross minimum tax floor. At current oil prices and company spending levels, we are expecting that total production tax revenue will be at or below the floor for each of the next 10 years in the forecast. For fiscal year 25, there was about $635 million of production tax revenue. We're forecasting $316 million for fiscal year 26 and $286 million for fiscal year 2027. Next is the petroleum corporate income tax. This is levied by the state on qualifying oil and gas corporations doing business in the state. Generated $133 million in fiscal 25. We're forecasting $140 million in fiscal 26 and $175 million in fiscal 27. The state has a property tax on all oil and gas property in the state. This is a 20 mils tax against which any municipal taxes on oil and gas property are allowed as a credit. So the amount shown here is just the remaining state portion of the property tax revenue. But that generated $134 million to the state in fiscal 25 and a little over $140 million per year forecast for fiscal 26 and 27. And then finally, the largest source of unrestricted petroleum revenue in dollars terms is state royalties, brought in about $1 billion in fiscal year 2025 and forecast at a little over $800 million per year in fiscal 26 and 27. Worth noting on the royalties number is this represents just the unrestricted general fund portion of the royalties. The permanent fund does receive between 25 and 50% of state royalties, as well as the public school trust fund receives 0.5%.
Mr. Stickel, when we have you back, breaking down the barrel increases into three categories, legacy, then 20% GVR and 30% GVR, I think we'll ask you to put the numbers together in the aggregate for that presentation, and also royalties. The concern there is production's going to increase, royalties are going to increase, and our severance tax is going to be at the floor or near the floor, which is zero, for severance tax for the foreseeable future. And I think there's some interest to look at the mechanics of that as the order of operations when we do that, and we'll have you walk through this GVR and the gross value point of production percentage against the gross or the net production tax or net production production tax value. So we see the gross value of the 20% or 30% against the net and the impact of piercing the floor and the growth in the barrels over time. And we can go out 10 years because you've mentioned that, but we want to concentrate probably on the next five. I know, so zero it in so we don't get too fixated a decade out. We've got to not go financially down the tube before we get there, year 10. So we're gonna look at year three, year five, and we'll work with you on that. But that's going to be the focus, and I've also asked DNR, Department of Natural Resources, whose area of governance is the royalties, to start breaking out the barrel projections to those three categories so we can keep track of those three categories, sum up the barrels, and we have our total barrels. But all barrels are not equal to the Treasury. So that's kind of the flavor of what's coming. I just thought I'd let the public know and yourself.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, we're happy to work with the committee on however you'd like to see the data broken out.
Yep.
So, and then later in the presentation, we'll have a detailed.
We have a question?
On this slide, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stickler, are you planning to talk about the NPRA line?
Senator Keel, through the chair, I'd be happy to.
Please.
So, Senator Keel, through the chair, as you noted, we have a line in here for NPRA royalties and related revenues. So this represents the 50% share of revenue from the National Petroleum Reserve for any bonuses, rents, and royalties received by the federal government. Those are shared with the state of Alaska. Historically, the entire amount of those payments was treated as a pass-through to communities in the North Slope borough via NPRA impact grants. And so up through fiscal year 2026, we actually reflected that as restricted revenue in the forecast. It was determined that treatment did not accurately capture federal law or state statute. In addition, there was passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that brought some changes to how NPRA revenues will be treated in the future. And the combination of those two things led to a kind of a revisit of how those revenues are being reflected in the revenue forecast. And so beginning in fiscal year 2027, we are showing those as unrestricted revenues, the 74.5%, and the permanent fund is receiving a 25% revenue share, and the public school trust fund is receiving a 0.5% revenue share. So what you see here in fiscal year 2027 under the unrestricted NPRA revenues represents the 74.5% expected unrestricted share of those revenues.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stickle, the only change in the law was the OBBB Act, and that didn't change where the money goes. It only changed the split of the money. The subsection on how the money is to be used didn't change a comma. What change in the federal law led the department to decide this was now unrestricted revenue?
Senator Keel, through the chair. So there was, as I mentioned, there was a determination that the prior treatment considering that as restricted revenue did not accurately capture the federal law and the state statute. And beyond that, I would defer any questions to Department of Law, who is evaluating these issues.
I think there's been a request by one of the members that we actually take a look at this issue in more detail, kind of the history of it, the federal law, the state law, our state statutes, the new interpretation or the updated interpretation for the committee. So we'll have that in a future one, but that's been requested by one of the members.
Thank you.
And we'll get with the department on how we're going to get it on the calendar and when, and when things get, give them time to prepare and all that, but we'll do that. Okay, next slide, please.
All right, moving on to slide 15, which shows some additional detail around the unrestricted non-petroleum revenues. So the largest portion here is taxes, and the largest portion of that is the corporate income tax for non-petroleum corporations, generated about $229 million in fiscal year 2025. We're forecasting $215 million for the current fiscal year and $250 million for fiscal year 2027. Adding in other taxes, we are estimating $456 million of total non-petroleum tax revenue in fiscal 26 and $511 million in fiscal year 2027. In addition to the taxes, other non-petroleum revenues include things like royalties on mineral, on mining resources, various charges for services, licenses and permits, and some miscellaneous revenues like dividends from state corporations. We did add a line here for unrestricted program receipts for this forecast. That was a change that we made over the summer in consultation with Office of Management and Budget. And what we did here is we worked through all of the program receipts authority in the state and looked at how much of the program receipts being collected are actually being used by the programs generating the receipts. And based on that evaluation, there is a portion of program receipts revenue that was actually surplus revenue above and beyond what is being used by the generating program or being carried forward. and we are showing that surplus revenue as unrestricted general fund revenue, whereas prior to this project we worked on over the summer, there was kind of a mix of ways that we were reflecting that. Some of it was still being shown as restricted revenue, some was being shown as unrestricted. But in total, a little over $60 million of those surplus program receipts are now being shown as unrestricted revenue. And so the final section of the presentation will walk through some of our detailed assumptions around the petroleum revenue forecast, starting with our oil price forecast on slide 17. This chart shows our fall forecast for oil, Alaska North Slope oil prices compared to the prior spring revenue forecast. We do use the futures market as the basis for our revenue forecast. That provides a timely and transparent methodology for producing the oil forecast. We generated our forecast on December 5th, ahead of releasing the revenue forecast, 6 days later? Compared to the spring forecast, there was a modest reduction to the forecast for the current fiscal year and the next couple of fiscal years, with the $5 reduction to the fiscal year 27 forecast being the most significant reduction. Once we get into the later years towards the end of the revenue forecast, the forecast was actually very similar to what we had in the spring forecast. So the market is really looking at the potential for an oversupplied situation kind of presently and for the next couple of years, but then that will hopefully resolve later in the revenue forecast. Slide 18 looks at our forecast compared to a couple of other sources. We compare our Alaska oil price forecast to Brent forecasts from a couple of different sources. We use Brent because it's a benchmark crude that prices very similar to Alaska crude. I think the difference between Alaska and Brent crude yesterday was like 1 cent. So we're trading very, very close. It gives us a good comparison. Usually when I show this chart, the lines are stacked pretty close together, and you know we're right in the range, and everyone's forecasting about the same thing. It looks a little different this year. So in terms of the futures market, that outlook hasn't changed much since we produced the revenue forecast. We're right on track with the current futures market. The short-term energy outlook from the Energy Information Agency is actually looking at quite a bit lower prices into the low to mid-50s for the next year or two. But analysts, on the other hand, on average, are forecasting prices a little bit higher than we are and what the futures market's saying. And so we've looked into that, and the Energy Information Agency, they have a statistical model that uses fundamental factors based on supply and demand. They are seeing a oversupplied situation in the market, and they're expecting that that will lead to lower prices to balance the market. The futures market incorporates more risk premiums, and then the EIA doesn't incorporate that directly. So, you know, our best guess there is that the futures market is incorporating more premiums around potential for geopolitical issues and uncertainty than what's being incorporated by the EIA, giving that little bit of a price difference there. And then finally, some of the analysts are actually a little bit more bullish in future years. One example is Goldman Sachs is actually pointing to the possibility of an undersupplied situation come 2028 as the lower prices that we see currently combined with strong global economic growth lead to demand outpacing supply. So kind of a range of potential prices. Our forecast falls in the middle of that range, but just points to, again, the possibility for some uncertainty around what future prices will bring. And slide 19 then takes that concept around price uncertainty and puts it into dollar terms. So what we've done here is we've shown our forecast for fiscal year 2027. We're forecasting $2.2 billion of unrestricted general fund revenue, if you don't count the permanent fund transfer. And around that forecast price, each change each $1 change in the oil price equates to about $30 million of unrestricted state revenue.
So we used to be at 45 million, then to 40, then to 35, and we're at 30. Do you see a basement there, Mr. Stickle?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. So this is based on, we are forecasting for production tax in particular, that most companies will be paying at or below the minimum tax floor for the foreseeable future. And so I think this $30 heuristic is kind of around the floor. Further to the left on this chart, if you had a situation where once you get to higher prices or lower spending levels, if you get a situation where more companies are paying above the minimum tax floor, yeah, then that dollar per dollar amount does change.
So it's 30 million at the back of the envelope numeric that members in the legislature should use for a dollar change in price.
Okay. That's correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Slide 20 looks at oil production. This is kind of a summary of some of the information we saw from Department of Natural Resources. We show our fall 2025 forecast compared to the prior spring 2025 forecast. We are seeing a trend of increasing production. For fiscal year 27, we're expecting that production will once again exceed 500,000 barrels per day on average as the PICA comes online. And then we have a couple years of kind of stable production based on just the continued decline of existing fields before we have even more new fields come online. But then later in the forecast, Willow coming online and the phase two of the PICA project. And so by 2032, we have production peaking over 600,000 barrels per day and then over 650,000 barrels per day in fiscal year 2033. So the outlook for production is it's optimistic. We have new oil coming soon.
So this is the money table. So we're going to convert those barrels to dollars. And if I know we have this commingled data that we have to use in the revenue source book. Is it possible when you come back with the GVR breakouts of the two GVRs, the 20 and 30%, and the legacy barrels, that you can allocate expenditures to those categories so we can see how those categories perform? And then we sum them up when we get our total revenue and our total barrels. Is that a possibility? Or,
Mr. Chairman, yes, I think we can do that. And again, happy to work with you and the committee on exactly how to present that.
Yes, that would be good. Senator Keel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, the disconnect, you talked about the money table, between the production forecast and the revenue forecast is awfully stark. I just thought I'd note, right, this looks pretty good. You'd think we'd be looking at revenues, but when I looked earlier in the forecast, the revenue production kind of looked like a dog's breakfast. So we may want to dig in just a little bit to how we've set the split.
I think the split is set for us with the age of the development, but we could also ask the department to give us a forecast of those three component parts into development, what developments are coming in the future, the next several years, because that makes a big impact also on dealing with the production tax. So we'll work with you, Mr. Stickle, on how to try to put that data the data request, you got to build it and put it together. And but we can roll that in. We can do a summary of the order of operations, but then just drill into the component that the committee is less familiar with and the legislature is less familiar with, is the splitting of the barrels.
Okay. All right, so the next slide, slide 21, looks at another piece of this revenue puzzle, which is allowable lease expenditures. These are the costs and investments made by the industry into the state. They give an important metric on industry investment taking place. They are also part of the production tax calculation for the net profits portion of that calculation, in that these costs are allowed as a deduction. In fiscal year 2025, we saw Alaska North Slope expenditures total over $8.7 billion. That is by far the highest amount that we have on record since we started tracking this data in the mid-2000s. So lots of money being spent on the slope, lots of activity taking place with the new fields, Pica and Willow, kind of headlining that activity, but there was also lots of development work taking place at some other new developments, a robust exploration season, and robust work taking place at existing legacy fields. For capital expenditures, the capital expenditures portion of that was $5.6 billion in fiscal 25. We are forecasting that was kind of the high water mark for the foreseeable future, but forecasting over $3 billion a year of North Slope capital spending going forward, that's still a very robust level of company spending on a historical basis. And then for operating expenditures, those came in at $3.1 billion in fiscal year 2025. We are forecasting continued increases in operating expenditures. There's been some cost inflation on the slope that is driving the higher operating costs. We also have the cost of operating new units that are coming online baking into that number.
Can you talk a little bit of how you risk adjust the capital expenditures? It seems I was expecting larger numbers out in front of us because of the forecasted development of the next several fields that the industry is looking at. And then there's also an interest in some new operators coming in. So how do you adjust that, or do you risk adjust it? How do you come up with that forward number?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. So for our forward projections, we develop a baseline projection for spending at each field. We do get information from field operators about their plans for at least the next 5 years, sometimes longer. We also look at recently reported information, both publicly and confidentially. And so we have a kind of an assumption around spending for each of the fields in the forecast. In terms of risking, we do try to tie that to the production forecast. At this point, the first phase of Pica is essentially a certainty. There's no risking there. For some of the other major new developments like Willow and the second phase of Pica, any risk adjustments are fairly minor. But for a new field that is less certain and further out, we do try to align the cost forecast to the production forecast. And so if we have a 50% risk factor on the production forecast, we would attempt to align the lease expenditure forecast with that as well. So to the extent that production were to be coming in higher than what we forecast, we would also have a corresponding increase to expected spending.
Okay. And then just remind us on the carry forward expenditures when they time out and get a little inflation adjusted time value of money adjustment to it. Can you remind us of that?
Sure. For the lease expenditures, to the extent that a company has revenue coming in, they are able to use lease expenditures 100% in the year incurred to offset the net profits portion of their tax calculation. We don't have any depreciation schedule required. And so for a existing producer making an investment, that's typically going to be the case. If you do have a new entrant or a company that is spending so much on their new developments that their spending exceeds the revenue that they're taking in from other operations, then they would enter into a net operating loss situation. and those excess lease expenditures above and beyond what's deductible in the tax calculation would generate what's known as a carried forward annual loss. That carried forward annual loss can be used in the production tax calculation to potentially offset future tax revenues limited by the minimum tax floor. And that carried forward annual loss is available indefinitely. There is what we call a downlift provision, where after the 8th or 11th year that the carried forward annual loss is incurred, that it decreases by 10% of the prior year ending value in each year. So companies do earn a potential benefit for spending, even if they don't have enough current tax liability to use that. There's a potential future offset. We're actually forecasting that given current oil prices and spending levels, that a portion of those carried forward losses that are incurred will never actually be applied.
Okay, and there's the bills, but you have two more slides, so you can't run away yet.
All right, Mr. Chairman. So the next slide, slide 22, looks at transportation costs. Similar history and forecast. These transportation costs are the cost of getting oil from Alaska to market, and they apply to both the production tax or the tax calculations as well as the royalty calculations. The primary sources here are the Trans-Alaska Pipeline or TAPS tariff, which is the tariff for getting oil from the North Slope down to Valdez. We're actually forecasting that the TAPS tariff will decrease over the time horizon of the forecast, and that's because you're taking a fixed cost of operating the pipeline and dividing that over many more barrels as Pica and Willow come online, which reduces the cost of transportation for all barrels going down the pipeline. The other major transportation cost is the marine transportation cost, which is the cost of getting the oil from Valdez to the West Coast market. And collectively, total transportation costs average $10.55 per barrel in fiscal year 2025, and we are forecasting that those will remain, the total transportation costs will remain steady and even decrease a little bit, remaining around that $10 per barrel range over the next decade. Mm-hmm. And the last slide of content is slide 23. Shows how state petroleum revenues vary by land type. I'd be happy to walk through each of these in detail or leave this with the committee in the spirit of time at your discretion.
Well, I think you could leave it with the committee. We're pretty familiar with it. It's nice to have a reminder because all oil is not equal. Now all barrels are not equal.
Sure.
So we're adding some complexity.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, one important change to this slide from prior years is that the One Big Beautiful Bill Act did make some changes to how federal revenue sharing is done with the state. So for several categories of land, beginning with federal fiscal year 2034, the state will receive a 70% share of revenues. And that's a change from prior years.
Okay, and we'll go into that in more detail. We have Senator Cronk. And then Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. Obviously we're talking about revenues. I'd like to have a better sense of the cost environment for development in Alaska and the role of inflation has played. So is there a way we could get the department to provide like a five-year look back on how inflationary pressures have impacted the cost of oil development in Alaska and maybe even nationally? Because, we're a lot of people that want to, let's get more money out of this, but the cost of development has increased also. So,
sure. Senator Cronk, through the chair, so I can point you to Appendix D of the Revenue Sources Book, which has a history of the total costs. In terms of the Alaska-specific operating environment, that's absolutely something we've heard from operators. In terms of more broadly looking at global and national trends, cost inflation in the oil industry has absolutely been an issue. We had 2 years of double-digit cost inflation in calendar 21 and 22, and then three straight years of mid-single-digit cost inflation. So across the oil patch, costs are higher, and combined with the moderate oil price, that makes a challenging environment.
Thank you.
We could, Senator Cronk, we've had in the past the industry come in and testify and talk about the cost environment. We can look at maybe doing that in the future, having them come in and talk about the in aggregate, because they all got their secret information from each other, but what the industry is facing, what they have faced, and what they how they see it going forward. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair. I've previously at this table asked about kind of the peace risk effect on revenues, lowering the price of oil. But recently, you know, in recent days, the refining risk on the West Coast has come up as West Coast politics are becoming antagonistic to refining, and the idea that refining may be moving out of the West Coast market to some extent. I'm just wondering, does any work get done on risk modeling of what that might look like, just as an outlier, should something, some major move in the availability of, we talk about the West Coast market, but what happens if that becomes attenuated because of the refiners no longer feeling they can do business there?
Senator Kaufman, to the chair, that's not something that we've looked at in a lot of detail. Be happy to give that some thought.
Thanks.
We have any other questions for the? Yeah, I'd like to thank Ms. Stickle for coming forward today, and thank the Acting Commissioner of Revenue, Janelle Earls. We're not such a scary lot, you know, and you've got a good employee there that can walk through this detailed stuff from memory, so I'd just rely on your experienced crew, and you'll do fine. And remember your fiduciary duties, and the keel won't be on top. The boat will actually be floating right side up, which is good. With that, we are going to conclude today. We are going to reconvene Monday morning, 9 a.m. We're going to put on the table the governor's FY27 budget request. We're going to have the Office of Management and Budget come to the committee and walk through it. And then later in the week, as we follow up, we'll have Legislative Finance walk through the budget with some recommended adjustments, and we'll start piecing the budget together and pick up some of these presentations we talked about in the next several weeks. We are adjourned at 10:25. We are adjourned.